We're back. Thank you, back. Hey, friends. You're listening to Life in Theater, the podcast where theater people of all kinds come to reconnect with why we chose this life in theater and spill the tea. On this show, we discuss their careers, what they wish they knew when they were starting, current theater culture, where they would like to see this art form go in the future, and much, much more. I'm your host, Tyler Calhoun, and I'm so happy that you decided to spend some time with me today. We are back with episode 4. If you listened to the first couple episodes, then it shouldn't be news to you that we are singing a song for the common man on this program. And that's a Dolly Parton reference for all the cool kids and country queens out there. Get into it! This episode continues a series I'm calling Things My Theater Teachers Taught Me. If you're a theater person, you know just how influential the guidance and mentorship of a theater teacher can be. Their impact lasts a lifetime, and on this episode, I am so freaking stoked to feature a conversation with an absolute icon. This woman took me on as a teaching assistant for 4 different semesters, choreographed me in over 8 shows, and I even used to watch her cat and mow her lawn when she was out teaching during the summertime at summer camp. Yeah. A friendship runs deep. Introducing one of my best Judies, Jennifer Feltz. Jen is one of my absolute most favorite people on this planet. But I need to put this in some context. The first time I met Jen was the first time I was ever late to a rehearsal in college. I know, me, late, yeah. It was my first show, The Merchant of Venice, and Jen came in to work with character physicality and some scene transitions with us. I made the classic mistake of taking just a short nap before rehearsal, and guess what? I got, bitch. Straight up played myself. I woke up to a call from my stage manager telling me that I was late and that they were working on my scene, so I needed to get there ASAP. I hopped up out of bed and thanked God that the rehearsal space was connected to my dorm room, so I was there in just a couple minutes. I used to be really straight-laced, and so my anxious heart was all aflutter. I thought I'd surely be getting in some kind of trouble, so I sheepishly walked up to the stage manager when I arrived. I apologized for being late, and shit you not, she said, "Don't apologize to me. Apologize to her." And she directed my focus towards this woman that communicated strength and power with her body and her gaze. I had never met this woman, and I was already intimidated by the sheer power radiating off of her body. Palms sweaty, heart pounding, I walked up to her and apologized, and she just said, "Okay, don't do it again." I know, right? And she just continued with what she was doing. Jen didn't know it, but this would be my first exposure to someone who specialized in physical theater. And after that rehearsal, the way I work in theater was forever changed. Alright, child, that's enough blathering from me. Let's get to the tea. I hope you enjoyed this interview with movement extraordinaire, Jennifer Feltz. Alright, so thank you so much for being here, Jen. I really, really appreciate that you're doing this. Seriously.
You're welcome.
And I love that you have Sour Patch Kids, because I was going to Haribo gummy candy and our shared love for it somehow, but I really didn't know how to bring it up in a question.
Yes. I do love some Haribo.
This is so good. So, how long have you been doing theater, Jen?
Oh my gosh. Whoa.
Oh yeah. We're going there. First question, girl.
Okay. I don't even know how to answer that. I mean, I guess like 20 years thereabouts.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you started around the year 2000?
Yeah. I mean, I graduated from high school in 99. And so I guess, you know, I got into theater in sort of like not a professional, obviously, but in a serious way.
Yeah.
Around that time. Yeah. So 20 years, egads.
That is so cool.
I'm old.
If you're old, that means that I'm getting old.
Well, you are.
Stop it! So, one of the one of the big reasons that I wanted to have you on this podcast is because you are a specialist in physical theater and movement and poetic transposition and all of these cool things that we are going to get into. When I met you and you were in that rehearsal for Merchant of Venice, that one rehearsal kind of teaching us about character, bodies, and transitions, literally, like, it changed my way of thinking about theater because I'd never had somebody pay attention to physicality and movement in such a specific way before.
Yeah.
It just awoke something in me to like want to learn about more. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so
you mentioned that because I had to go back and say, what did I do? But it came back to me. I remembered.
I know, when I was writing my my introduction for you, I was like, oh my God, how many shows did I work on with Jen?
A lot. A
lot. It's like over 9.
Really? Okay. I was going to say like probably between like 7 and 12. So that makes sense. But I can't. Wow.
In so many different capacities.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool. So I know, right? It's weird to think about. But I love that we've gotten to work with each other in so many different capacities.
Yeah, me too. It's been wonderful.
So your background involves physical theater. For listeners who may be unfamiliar with that world, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what it is and your specific training.
Well, physical theater is usually in terms of theater that is limited in language. It doesn't mean that it's like, you know, Marcel Marceau mime, that it's absent of words, but it's usually centered around, you know, the physical environment. So the body, making space with the body and using, you know, our body as a virtuosic instrument as an actor. Mm. And there are many, many different disciplines to study this. But I studied specifically the work of Jacques Lecoq.
Yes. We love Lecoq.
Lecoq coming at ya.
The best name for any theater practitioner ever.
Yes, and I think he gave it to himself, but I'm not 100% sure. I don't know if that was his, like, born, like, that wasn't his name he was born with. I think it was something that he adopted, but I might be wrong.
I'm going to have to fact check that.
Yeah, you fact check it, but that's what I had heard before, is that he gave himself, you know, the rooster.
What made Jacques Lecoq and his technique different from other movement practitioners?
Well, one of the things that Jacques Lecoq did was that he spent his early days as a gymnast. Mm-hmm. And so he came at theater from a physical direction, that he was a gymnast. And he started to look at the world around him and say, like, if I wanted to become this rainstorm outside, how could I do it in a physical way? And so he started just looking at different environments that we have and transformations of elements. So, like, you know, like fire, water, wind, even changes in state from like a solid to a liquid, or, I mean, there's many, many things I can go on, but how we could make that happen within our human body.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where his direction that he came from that way. And he experimented and created a whole technique of theater and started his own school.
And it's still running, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's in Paris.
Oh, to go train at the Jacques Lecoq school in Paris.
Yeah. I mean, he's no longer there, unfortunately, but many brilliant people have followed in his path.
And so you did your undergrad at Eastern and
yes,
your graduate studies, it was in London.
Yeah, I went to the London International School of Performing Arts, which, so Jacques Lecoq started his school in Paris that teaches what they call the complete pedagogy.
Mm-hmm.
And so as that went on for years and years, there were different people that learned the complete pedagogy and then started their own school.
Mm.
And so, like, there's one now in Italy, there's one in Belgium, there's one in California, there's one in Pittsburgh, there's one in Southeast Asia somewhere, I can't remember. Mm-hmm. So there's a few of them peppered around the world. The school that I went to was started by somebody that learned the pedagogy from Lecoq, and he started his own school in London in connection with another Lecoq practitioner. And that school has now since moved to Berlin.
Oh, okay. So we're just like country hopping all over Europe.
Yeah. So I guess there's one in Berlin now, but there has been another one started again in London. So London still does have one there. You know, geopolitics play into all of this stuff. And that's kind of partially why they move schools.
That is so fascinating. And I love that you brought that up because I have a question related to that very topic later. But for right now, what I want to ask you is, what drew you to focus in on physical theater?
Oh, this is a wonderful act. This is a wonderful story.
Ooh, I'm so excited.
It was an accident.
What?
Yes. I decided that I went to grad school at LISPA. I'll just call it that. That's what they call it for short. And when I initially went there, I went there because I was really interested in learning different mask techniques. And part of the program was learning, you know, you learn 5 different types of theatrical mask. And so that really interested me. But because I'm from the US, the idea of like physical theater didn't really exist here at that time, especially. And it wasn't until I started the program that I learned the term Lecoq or physical theater. I mean, I guess I knew it, but I didn't really understand what that was. I mean, my eyes were opened very wide, very quick. Hmm. Well, it was the first time in life that, you know, like when I was taking a quote unquote acting class or a quote unquote theater class that I felt like a duck to water. Hmm. You know, it was like finally something made sense in my bones. Whereas, you know, before to me, and this might not be completely truthful, but I looked at acting work as an intellectual exercise. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought about it as very scientific in a way. And I think it is scientific. I think that you have to, you know, in order to be a good performer, you have to look at the work very, what's the word? I don't know. I'm not making sense, but what's the word I'm looking for?
Methodically.
Yeah, methodically, right? You have to, like, there's steps that you have to take, and they have to make logical sense when you do them. And I understood that part of it, but I could never understood translating that. I guess it was twofold. When I took previous acting classes, there was like an intellectual exercise and there was an emotional exercise. Mm-hmm. And they lived parallel to me. Maybe that meant I'm kind of a bad actor. I'm not sure. But they kind of like lived in two separate worlds and I had to kind of bash them together. Mm-hmm. But when I found physical theater, I found that through the technique, I found the emotion.
Yeah.
And I didn't find that in, you know, other ways of exploration previously. Mm-hmm. I could find the emotion, or I could find the analysis.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find the emotion through the analysis. Hmm. And when I started doing physical theater, that's where I found that like synthesis, I suppose.
I think that's fascinating. And especially that the synthesis happens in the body for you.
Yeah.
And for physical theater. I think that says a lot.
Yeah. And you don't, I always say like, you know, and I think this is true of all actors. You have to use like your intellect, mm-hmm. but then you have to let it go and let it sink into the guts and the loins.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, if you're thinking about what you did in rehearsal, you're not in the moment.
Right. And if you're thinking about what the character's motivations are, mm-hmm. you know, there's a point where that has to, you have to ask yourself all those questions. Absolutely. But there's a point where you have to understand them in your bones so that you don't have to intellectualize that as you're working.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, there are many people that can find that intellectual path in.
Mm-hmm.
I just never could.
Right. And I mean, I don't think that you're alone in that, you know, because there are so many artists that do flock to physical theater once they find it and once they know it's an option for them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So your specialization allows you to wear many hats. She's a director. She's a choreographer. She does movement consultant work. She does fight directing. Literally, there's so many things that you can do being somebody that specializes in movement. So what are your favorite areas to work in or stretch your physical theater skills?
Oh, well, you know, I think straight off the bat, doing fight direction and fight choreography and just being like a, you know, stage combat, it's so new to me that I think, you know, to me that that's the longest haul that I have to make. If we were going to say like, there's a trajectory of where people go to like really choreograph excellent fights.
Mm-hmm.
I am crawling, you know, I'm not walking yet even. But because of my movement background, I had some of the rudimentary skills about like safety, partnering, those type of things that really come in handy. But as far as the skill set and the, you know, I've choreographed
mm-hmm.
in musicals for a long time, and I'm not a quote unquote dancer, I would say, but you know, I choreographed the movement. But translating that kind of work to like choreographing fights is, I haven't found that connection for myself yet. It's a rethinking for me. So it's certainly a challenge, and it's certainly a place that I need to get better at and I need to go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of exciting to, you know, force yourself. And also I'm getting older and my body's ricketier.
Yeah.
You know, when you do a lot of stage combat and you're like 18 or 20 or even 25,
mm-hmm.
you can take a lot more licks than at 40, which I'm not quite 40 yet, but I'm pretty soon. Just a few months.
Just to keep it accurate, because we only tell the straight tea, the real tea, nothing but the tea.
That's right.
No, I think that's interesting too that you say that, because it is like the newest thing that you kind of have been adding to your tool belt.
Yeah.
And it's cool to see you as somebody that like is a mentor to me and many other students, you know, sharpening your skills, adding things to your tool belt, even though she's not 40 yet, she's still learning, she's still growing. That's inspirational.
Well, you have to, because you'll become bored.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know any, you know, professor that I work with or anybody that I've ever known that just said, yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's nothing more to gain. Even if, you know, your real interest is just staying sharp on what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's about understanding the place that we live. I like those physical tools to say, like, get me in this. And I also think that it's incredibly important
mm-hmm.
to be a student again.
Yeah.
It's hard for me, you know, because I'm 39 and I go into these classes that are full of 25-year-olds
mm-hmm.
and I'm a chubby lady. There's certain expectations that are already, you know, knocked against me for being there. A woman, older, chubby, you know, I'm not quote unquote in shape like some of these people. Or to say like, what is she doing here? And in addition to that, having a sense of confidence about what I know I'm good at already. And then moving into a space where I don't have that level of cred.
Yeah.
And I think it's important as a teacher to understand what it's like for my students, especially when I'm hard on them mm-hmm. and they react in a variety of different ways when I might be hard on them, and to see where that kind of stuff can come from. Because I mean, I will tell you, I have done these workshops and taken these classes and sobbed at them.
Yeah.
you know, where you sit there and you go, oh, and you don't know why you're crying. Well, you know why? Because I'm exhausted.
Yes.
Yeah. To remember these things that, you know, or to say, how can I be a good student? How can I model that sort of behavior? And I can't always say that I am. I mean, I try to go in there with the mindset to say, can I be empty? Can I go in here empty and come out full and be gracious and thankful for that?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you have somebody critiquing, you know, adjusting.
Yep.
And as you know, too, that that process of critique and adjustment can sometimes feel a bit bashing. And it's almost always not their intention.
Right. Right.
And to remember that, you know, as a person who does it to other people. So sometimes it's good to be on that other side of the...
That is so real. Because just being, I think this last year in grad school, having taught speech and then being in classes also, and flip-flopping that teacher hat, student hat all the time, it really brought a lot of focus and consciousness to my feedback and the way that I'm teaching and guiding. And, you know, one, having the confidence of what I know, you know, not being a pushover, but also realizing where they're at, you know, totally being as flexible as I can with everything that was happening with COVID-19, you know.
Oh, certainly.
And anything else that came up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as a professor, any opportunity that you get to put yourself in that place of the student, even if it's just for a moment, to think about what it's like, it'll help you as a teacher.
I mean, it just makes you ultimately human.
Yeah.
And I think that theater teachers in general are a little better about that because we deal in empathy on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And we are, you know, we're supposed to understand human nature and be sympathetic or empathetic of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not everybody can always, nobody can always do that always.
No, it's unrealistic.
You know, and it's probably not helpful either.
Probably not, honestly.
You know, there are times where people need rigidity or they need to fail.
Yeah.
And then sometimes they need a boost.
Yeah.
And so it's a constant weighing exercise of that, I think, for teachers. And I think it's important for us to always put ourselves back in those shoes.
Yeah. From your perspective, what are the benefits of having a movement practitioner on a production team?
I think that one of the most important reasons to have a movement practitioner is to make sure that people are moving safely.
Mm-hmm.
Safety is a huge component. And especially with young actors, I think it's very important because young actors don't know yet that they will be old actors, hopefully. And so I think movement coaches and movement directors can be there to help guide people so that they don't make mistakes that could injure them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
And then I also think that it eases up some time for a director, because there might be moments in a piece or a color in a piece that a movement director can go in and say, boom, 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 let's really focus on these things. And it allows the director to focus on the storytelling. It allows them to focus on the big picture. When you have somebody that's there taking care of coloring the picture in, I mean, that's part of what, you know, the lighting designer, the set designer, the costume designer, they all add color to that picture. And the director, the movement director can help the director color that physical part of the picture too, whether it's, you know, the safety of the movement or how they interact with each other. Or maybe there is something that is an avant-garde section where it needs to be sort of supernatural or next to normal. And that's where a movement director can come and very quickly make that kind of stuff happen.
Right.
Yeah.
And I find that movement people are very willing to play, you know, Yeah. And so if you even have like an idea and you're like, and it's not like fully crystallized or formed yet, you can usually give that to a movement person and it'll be something for them to play with and explore from that they can engage the director with in some kind of a dialogue to refine or change so that it works for what they need.
Yeah. And that's usually when I've movement directed. A lot of times the director will be with me the whole time and we'll have a dialogue to say, is this what you're looking for? No, not exactly. Can we do this? And then sure. And it's just an evolution of, it's an evolution of play, you know, physical play.
Yeah. That's so cool. So I was your teaching assistant for 4 years.
Was it 4 years?
4 years. You literally could not get rid of me.
Oh my God. Wow.
So I saw a lot of diversity in terms of enthusiasm for this kind of work amongst your students.
Yeah.
It was different for every class. I mean, the journey with physical theater is different for every actor. So I was wondering, can you talk about what it's like to work with young actors specifically on movement?
I think it's one of the greatest joys in the world because they have no frame of reference.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have people that have a frame of reference to anything or have maybe taken a workshop in something, like let's say Shakespeare, everybody has read Shakespeare in high school. Mm-hmm. So you start there. So there's already a color, good, bad, or ugly. But when you're teaching movement, for the most part, they have zero experience.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no expectation from them. So it's just guiding them on a journey, which is so exciting. And you might be surprised to hear this, but I'll tell you, some of my favorite people are the skeptics.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because the skeptics clarify the work.
Mm.
If I just sat there and I just led people and I said, this is how you do it, this is where we go, and everybody goes right on, you know, it's not a very exciting journey. But when somebody says, this doesn't make sense, or that is not right, that's where we get a chance to really explore it, because it's not, you know, I tell my students that all the time in class. It's like, you know, this isn't gospel. It's not my gospel.
Right.
So we can sort of explore it. We can dissect it. The only thing that students have to have in order to really grow is a willingness.
Mm-hmm.
If I have somebody who is not willing, and that can be people who don't challenge me or people that do.
Yeah.
But if they're not willing to really go for it, you will never go anywhere.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is a lovely metaphor for life, isn't it?
Literally. I mean, anything. If you don't want to quit cigarettes, it's not going to happen.
What is it? Is it Wayne Gretzky that said, you'll never get a goal? Wait, sports.
What is it? What, you miss like...
You miss every goal you didn't attempt? Was it Wayne Gretzky? Was it a basketball player?
Wait, is Wayne Gretzky...
Hockey. That much I do know. But maybe it's Air Bud.
To follow up with that question, why do you think that young actors should pursue or stick with physical training?
Well, I think that one of the biggest reasons and most important reasons is that young actors have just gotten their adult body. And like, what time is it better to learn how to use it?
Yeah.
And harness it? Because I can't say it'll never happen, but throughout your life, your body will change on you.
Mm-hmm.
And you will have to re-explore it and you will have to relearn it and how to use it and its strengths and the weaknesses that it has and to work on those. So I think it's the best thing that a person can do is to say, this is how it works. And I also think, well, I don't think, I know. There's so much insecurity that comes from puberty. And there's so much insecurity that comes from your high school days about how you look wrong, whatever it is. Nobody ever leaves that period going, these are the best parts of me, right? No, we have a long, we have a laundry list of all of the things that are incorrect. You know, my teeth are too far apart. My forehead's too big. I'm too fat. I'm too thin. And so I think the best thing that we can do is learn to embrace what we have and respect it.
Yeah.
Because it carries you every day down the street. Your body comes with you everywhere. Like, we're very cognizant of our thoughts, our emotional states, but we don't sort of go like, I'm bringing this body everywhere I go.
Yeah.
Other than to say, do I look thin enough to like go out?
Yeah. How do I look?
Yeah. How do I look? But like, how does it feel? Like, how do I need to nourish it? How do I need to support it? Like, what part of me is feeling weak today? And to sort of take stock of those things, which I try and do. I fail a lot. You know, like, but I think failure's part of it too, because it is a sense of, and this all sounds all very like body lovey and stuff. And it's not necessarily my intention, but that's not a bad thing, I suppose.
No.
That we have to just forgive ourselves sometimes.
Yeah.
And allow ourselves to be weak or fragile or vulnerable or frail. Hmm. And embrace those in the same way we do that when you feel strong. And so I think that that's why the movement work is so important.
Yeah.
Is just take care of it, because you know what? Hopefully you have a really long life with your body and it's going to be there the whole time. Now, that being said, I have abused mine somewhat.
Yeah, she puts a Sour Patch Kid into her.
That's right.
It was blue raspberry, if anybody wants to know the flavor.
That's right. I would be drinking, friends, but I'm pregnant, so I can't.
Congratulations on your new baby, by the way.
Yay!
Theater people often struggle with confidence, whether that be in the audition room, on stage, or off stage. So how can physical theater help theater artists in this area of their career?
Oh my God, I don't think it can.
Really? You don't think so?
Well, I suppose that connecting to your breath is always a great way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at the end of the day, the only thing about the confidence that's really going to get you through is age.
Yeah.
I think the older you get, the less that you worry. But that's not totally true. I always do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that to turn a negative into a positive, but lacking confidence can sometimes be a good quality.
Yeah.
As long as it's not your only quality.
Yeah.
If you lack confidence, learn more.
Yeah.
And I think to take stock, to say like, am I really not confident, or am I just tired?
Am I hungry?
Right. Or am I intimidated?
Yeah. And if so, why am I intimidated?
Right. So it's kind of like, because there's things all the time that I lack confidence in. Every time I go into a class each semester, I have no confidence that it will be successful.
Oh my gosh.
I have no confidence that it will be successful. I mean, every year when I start teaching,
mm-hmm.
I think I don't know what I'm doing. It's all a disaster. People are going to see right through me. I mean, it's that imposter syndrome.
Exactly.
And then the moment I go in there and I start talking, like, my body remembers that.
You know what you're talking about.
Know what I'm talking about. I mean, sometimes. You were my teacher assistant for 4 years, so I'm sure you saw me go off the rails a couple of times.
I don't think so. I think your response to that question is just so interesting, because for me, and the way that I perceive you, especially like the first time I met you and the first day of class, it's just this strong woman that communicates strength and power. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I get that a lot. But what it really is that I have my pelvis grounded underneath me and I have a booming voice. I mean, these are things that like I can't control. And if I dial it back, it was the thing as a child I got most in trouble for.
Really?
You know, I was chastised a lot as a child, not by my parents, but in school.
Oh.
That I was regularly in trouble for talking. And it was, you know, I got that classic response, which was like, I'm not the only one talking. You're the only one we can hear.
Oh my gosh. So you've always been a theater girl.
Oh gosh.
Yes.
It did start very young. Yeah.
Yeah. It's those physical qualities.
It is those things, you know, but like at the end of the day, I question myself just as much as anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more, but I don't know. I'm not inside everybody's head.
Bro, thank God.
Right.
Okay, so moving on to a different color of physical theater.
Mm-hmm.
What frustrates you about physical theater or just theater in general?
One thing that always frustrates me is the beginning of that process, especially when I'm choreographing something that's physical, something that is like I said before, extraterrestrial, which isn't the right word, but like not realistic.
Yeah.
Finding that pulse and knowing what you want it to look like, but not being able to get it to look there. Or I think one of the things for me is that I very much struggle with articulating my thoughts sometimes. So there is I feel like sometimes, and this is one of my things that I'm always not confident about, is I feel like in a verbal jabbing session with people that I'm like, I sound like a big, like bricklayer in Brooklyn, you know, like, hey, yeah, you know, like Hulk smash, like that. I don't have, I feel like a flowery, nuanced, sort of exciting, articulate world when I explain things. It's like, move here.
Barking orders at people.
Yeah. And I have to work on it. So I think that that's one frustration that I have, is that always when I'm writing or directing any of that stuff, that I just sort of go, how do I not sound like a Cro-Magnon woman?
Oh my God. A Cro-Magnon woman.
Okay.
The name of this episode is going to be A Chat with a Cro-Magnon Woman.
Right. It would be. It'd be like, it's me making guttural noises the entire time.
When watching international works, I've noticed that there's often more incorporation of movement as spectacle and storytelling in theater than we see from shows in the United States. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was a disconnect for a long time with more physicalized types of theater with the U.S. and other parts of the world, but it's coming.
Yeah.
And I would say even probably in the past 7 years, there's been a lot more work that's come to Broadway that's had influences, mainly because of work that was done at the National Theater that had been brought over, which is the National Theater of London.
Right.
I mean, this type of work has existed in, you know, the Far East forever.
Yeah.
And other parts of Europe and things, you know, they saw it come a little later, but there was kind of a disconnect. And I don't know if this is accurate or not, but I do know that some of this happened because of like Stanislavski and the work that he did and how it translated in the United States versus like the offshoots of how it got transformed by like Maeterlinck and people. Maeterlinck, right? Meyerhold, that's the word. I'm like, that's not, Maeterlinck was a playwright. So that like you have people like Meyerhold and then Grotowski. Why can't I talk?
Girl, because it's like almost 9 o'clock.
Yes. And so you have all those people and then Cocteau, and they all come over and they're doing this type of work, and it's infused more into that like mainstay. I'm going off the rails here.
Oh my God. No, it's great. I love it.
But that's one of the reasons, because of how it became so, you know, poetic realist in this country. You know, we had that movement of poetic realism here, and it became translated into the movies. And the acting was just more suited to film than it was the stage.
Yeah.
And so that kind of made things trickier here. But then I think what happens is that people started writing plays that were meant for the theater again, because there were a lot of times that there were write these beautiful plays that would probably be better as film and were better as film, you know, in the 50s and the 60s and going on. And then you start having people that start to do, I mean, there's a whole theater history thing that I'm not making sense, but you know, Joseph McCarthy shut down and like, you know, made artists work impotent, and that ripple effect probably lasted until the late 70s, early 80s. So theatrically speaking, we were a little bit behind, even though there was still amazing work done here.
Right.
But now we see this influence that's coming over now from Far East and Europe and all of these things, and it's translating into that. And so we're kind of, I think, at this moment where we're going to see theater, and we have seen it. I shouldn't say we are. We have seen it, that it is theater. It's theatrical.
Yeah.
It's not realism on stage. It's, you know, it has something that's more spectacular, because if you're going to watch realism on stage, a movie's going to do it better. You know, film, cinema, that's the medium for making something feel close and small and intimate like that. But if you want something that's going to be, you know, have metaphor and become three-dimensional and take you outside of those realms and break through barriers, that's where theater lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if any of that made sense.
Oh my God, it totally did. That was so good. Such a good response. Okay. This kind of plays off of that a little bit. From the beginning of your theater career to now, what do you think is the most significant change that you've noticed or participated in?
Well, I think one of the biggest shifts that I have had, I think that I wanted to be an actor. And along the way, I turned out to be an artist. And learning that those are two different things, I thought it was an exciting moment that you don't have to, you know, put yourself in any sort of box, you know, that anything's possible. And I mean, if one day I decide to leave this whole theater game and become a florist, I'm still an artist at my core. You can't take that away from me.
No, never.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful. And I identify with that.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people, they find their way into theater, not for selfish reasons, but for the things that you see on the surface. But then the people that really like stick with it, whether that be in whatever capacity, even if you're an audience member, like theater has, it's kind of made its way into you in some way that's different than anything you saw on the surface level before you got into it.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, there's a tremendous amount of sacrifice that you choose to make if you choose to go into this world. I think that I've been incredibly lucky, but there are sacrifices that had to be made along the way to make the choices that I did. And I'm sure there will be new types of sacrifices that I continue to make. But yeah, there's something that at your core is a part of you. And I think that the most exciting thing about theater is that if you did one play in high school, I bet that if you asked that person if they were an actor, they would say yes.
Yeah.
You know, that it there is that moment of transformation, that if we find that moment of transformation, and you know that you can transform.
Yeah.
You're an actor.
Yeah.
Even if you don't act ever again, you're an actor. And I mean, that's one thing too, I think, that makes theater people in general a little scary.
Mm-hmm.
Or mocked, maybe, is the fact that, you know, people have seen them transform. And they like to transform. And it's intimidating and it's weird. But we know that it's pleasurable and it makes us understand things better.
Yeah, helps us understand ourselves better, too.
Mm-hmm. And the world around us. I mean, I always tell my beginning acting students, if you don't learn anything else from basic acting.
Yeah.
Learn to just step back and forget everything that you've ever learned in your life to see how somebody else could have come to a different opinion. You know, there's a lot of polarization in our world right now, and I'm as guilty as anybody else, mm-hmm. you know, to say that's crazy or that's madness. But sometimes you just have to say, I didn't grow up like that. Those aren't my experiences. If I had experienced those things and not the things that I did, would I be there too?
Yeah. And it reminds you that the differences that we have don't separate us as much as we think.
Absolutely. And that most of the time, instead of having anger or resentment, you should have compassion and,
yeah,
you know, sympathy.
I completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of changes would you like to see happen in theater over the next 25 years?
Oh my God.
I know, it's a big question.
One of the changes I think that would be fantastic, and you see bits of this happening, but for it to really become part of our educational process. No, I think from the time that people are small to the time that people are grown, they should be understanding theater. And it can be in a very simplistic way.
Mm-hmm.
Just playing, by just improvising, that type of thing that keeps the body loose, that keeps you playful, the thing that keeps your brain cooking and thinking. It just makes you more creative. It makes you more lively. It makes you happier. It makes you more present.
Mm-hmm.
And who can't use that?
I think we could use more of it, honestly.
100%. I mean, children, adults, and obviously, I mean, you can't go, you know, I'm not saying that this is going to have to be compulsory for everybody forever, but, you know, like from K to 12, having it be as important as math,
mm-hmm.
I think would really be a savior, because probably like you, when I was in school, I had never taken any acting classes or anything like that. And when I finally did, I was home, and it made me see a future for myself. Now, I ended up pursuing theater, and I end up, you know, my career is in theater, and I'm incredibly lucky for that. But had I not found it,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what I would have done. And I can't think that it would have been pretty.
Yeah.
And even if, you know, I didn't ultimately have success in, you know, or a job in theater, I call it success, having a job in theater. but even if I didn't, you know, do this ultimately, I would have been better off because of it.
Absolutely.
So it gave me courage, a confidence, a sense of, I mean, it was the only subject I was good at.
Same.
You know, and when you finally take a class that you're good at, it makes you a little bit better at the rest of them. I've never been a big reader. I've never been a person that could sit and read a novel.
Yeah.
But I read play after play after play after play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a way to make you think, make you explore your mind, and makes you an all-around better person. I really think so.
Yeah. What is something that you wish you would have known at the beginning of your theater career?
That I didn't have to be such a bitch.
Oh, really? She was a bitch?
I still am, kind of.
I don't think you're a bitch.
Well, thank you. I'm not. I think, yeah, I mean, I wish that I had been nicer to people.
Yeah.
And I always, I mean, I tell my students that now, to be nice, but I was judgmental mm-hmm. of people's work. I think that, you know, that came out of a sense of insecurity.
Yeah.
I was insecure about myself. I was insecure about how I looked and how I moved and all of those things. And it made me mean, you know, it made me snarky. It made me judgmental. And it didn't help me.
No. You know, I found that like the more time I spend in my insecurity, the less time I'm spending in my work, myself, the things that fulfill me and sustain me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I can still be snarky on occasion, or if I think somebody's really, you know, full of it, I might say something. I can't say the judgment is completely gone, but the judgment has changed. It comes from a place of, I would never tear somebody apart.
Yeah.
I would have before. I, you know, like I might not like something that somebody does or some work or whatever it may be, but who cares what I think?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that, you know, I wouldn't go in there and say, this is a piece of garbage. I might say, it's not my thing.
Yeah.
Because I'm not the end all be all.
Right.
I mean, even my students, I, you know, they would say things like, you know, if I don't like something, or who am I?
Yeah.
My student, you know, I've had people in the past say, do you think I can do this? Do you think I have the ability to do this? And I can't tell them because I don't know what it takes. And, you know, I think that to be successful, it's such like a flash in the pan, you know, to be quote unquote famous or to make a lot of money doing this.
Yeah.
It takes so many stars to align for that to happen. So many accidents to have taken place. But at the bottom line, it's usually there's a couple things that have to be there, and it's tenacity and it's kindness.
Yeah.
Those have to be there, but all of the rest of it, there are too many variables
mm-hmm.
for me to sort of ever make. And who knows? I mean, at the end of the day, I might not know anything.
Who does know anything? Honestly, what is success?
I don't know.
How do you quantify or measure success? That's on you to define.
At 100%.
Yeah.
100%. I mean, any given day, I'll tell you whether I'm successful or not.
It changes.
Yeah.
So being your teaching assistant for 4 years. Yep. mm-hmm. In class, you often say that movement lessons are life lessons. So what is something mm-hmm. significant about life that movement has either taught or shown you?
Well, I think the number one thing that always comes to my mind is that in order for the human body to move forward, it indeed has to move backwards first. And I think that through whatever trials and tribulations, you know, nothing in life, any goal that you pursue is never linear. And just to remember that when you're having those moments of quote unquote failure or regression, that maybe you're just getting momentum. You know, and I think it's like the ultimate sense of yeah. self-forgiveness to say like, you know, I'm in a rebuilding phase. You know, it's like I'm going backwards because I'm going to move forwards. It's like sometimes when you eat that bag of potato chips late at night, you're just moving backwards.
Okay, I'm just taking 2 steps back. That's all right.
And then, you know, I'll move forwards on the treadmill tomorrow.
Exactly. Something that I wanted to say about that, your yeah. response. There was one night in rehearsal for the birthday party, and it might have been like the night that we were supposed to be off book or something. And I don't know what. I was having a shit night in rehearsal. And pretty much everything up until then had been going like pretty fine. And I remember you came out to me and you're like, what's up? And I was like, I'm so sorry. I don't know what the fuck is happening tonight. And you're just like, it's all right. You got to go backwards to go forwards. And I was like,
oh, what a predictable bitch.
be farther from the truth. And like in that moment, you told me everything that I needed to hear. Cause I left that rehearsal and I was just like, I let that sink in, you know. You have to go backwards to go forwards. And I believed that.
Well, and I think, yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off. But there is this thing too, especially like when you're performing and you're learning all this stuff. There's so many moving pieces that are coming at you and you're making sense of it all. And I find that happens with a lot of actors where there's one night that everything falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next night, it's all back together, or, you know, and it's beyond that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like, I'm working through all of this mess, all of these cobwebs. I have all of these balls up in the air and can't keep it all going. And then you go home and you sleep. And the next day, like through that sleep, it's all processed. It all makes sense. And then you're like, yeah, there it is.
Yeah. It's so real. Actors are incredible synthesizers.
Yeah, totally.
And that lesson has brought me a lot of comfort in my life when she has taken a few steps back. So thanks.
Oh, you're very welcome. But your body taught you that, remember.
Oh, okay. What do you want theater people to know about physical theater?
That it's theater. You know, it doesn't have to live in this weird compartmentalized world.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of people go, oh, well, that lives over there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm doing legitimate theater. And that theater lives over there, whatever that type of theater may be. I think that, you know, there's lots of different offshoots of theater.
Yep.
And they're all one. They all work together. It's just a tool in your toolbox. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's it. It's just to say, like, you all, and as an actor, as a performer, as a director too, you need to have all of these realms of understanding. I mean, it doesn't need to be fully digested.
Right.
But understood, you know, like these are out there. This is where this come from.
Yeah.
You know, this is what this is an homage to, that kind of thing.
Right. If you ever want to pull that stuff into your work, it's just going to make your work more colorful.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you want non-theater people to know about theater or what it has to offer?
I think that what non-theater goers should understand is that the play that they saw in high school that alienated them from it is not it.
A little louder for the people in the back.
I always say that, you know, and we have, because this is one of the challenges of theater and also why it's such a special secret for so many of us. It's not accessible.
Yeah.
You have to work for it. You have to, you know, dress up. You have to purchase tickets. You have to haul yourself there. It's usually not close. These are a lot of steps that most people don't want to take because it's too hard. I mean, it's way easier to pour into a movie theater that's 10 minutes down the street and you can wear your jeans to.
Mm-hmm.
And it costs a fraction of the price.
Yeah. And you can buy a ticket without ever having to talk to a person.
Exactly. And so when you have that experience, if you go see a bad movie at the cinema, you let it go.
Yeah.
But when you see a bad play,
ooh.
There's something that's visceral, and it's also because you're captive. You know, it's like if I'm watching, you know, like if I don't like a movie at the movie theater, I get up, I go to the bathroom, I can go get concessions, I can refill my extra large popcorn.
Yes.
You can't do that in the, you know, the legitimate theater.
Yeah.
You have to sit there, you can't come back in if you leave. It's hard to get through the aisles because it's usually busy. So there's all of these complications, but I will tell this to you, but I always use this in my theater class. I'm like, finding the type of theater that moves you is like finding the person that you're going to spend the rest of your life with. You got to go through a lot of stinkers before you find one that's worth it. And when you do, it erases all of that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I would say there's a handful of plays in my life. I've seen a lot of good work.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of not very good work. But there's only a handful of things that I've seen that I can still physically in my bones remember.
Yeah.
You know, like, I remember the moment on stage when this happened. I can explain it with, like, vivid color exactly what happened on stage because it was so dynamic and moving and or hilarious or, you know, cathartic, whatever it is. I don't have that same feeling about films.
Yeah.
I just don't, like, and I love film. I watch a lot of film. I watch a lot of TV.
Mm-hmm.
But it just doesn't evoke that experience the way that theater does, because you're so captive. And I think that it's kind of our dirty little secret in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to make a choice to kind of dig in.
Yeah. I love that. Jen, you are so amazing.
Thank this, you.
Like, I'm so excited for people to listen to this. Just like learn about physical theater and to learn about all the cool stuff about theater that people don't really ever talk about. Yeah.
Thank you. It's been really nice.
Thanks for being with
me. You brightened my quarantine.
Oh, the quarantine blues.
Yeah.
Thank you for your support of life in theater. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. You are creative, valuable, and loved. And don't you forget it. Yes, you, listening to this very program. If you like what I'm doing here with Life in Theater, be sure to subscribe, give a rating, or leave a review, or even share an episode on social media. That does a lot to help people find the show. You can chat with me and other listeners by following the show on Instagram at Life in Theater Podcast. Life in Theater is an independent podcast, and we are supported by the generosity of listeners like you. So, if you have the means and want to support the production of new episodes, be sure to subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/lifeintheaterpodcast. There you can submit questions to be asked on the show and get access to exclusive bonus content, like the answers to questions not featured on the original episode, and maybe even a story about how Jen met Peruse. Yeah, that might be in there. Oh, and find out what made Jen say this.
Anything is possible, but not everything is probable.
Oh, yep. You know that is some hot tea. You can become a Patreon today for as little as $5 a month. That's patreon.com/lifeintheaterpodcast. I like to end each podcast episode with a ghost light quote. Ghost lights have a long history with theater, and they are still used on Broadway and in theaters all across the world to help the last few stragglers see their way out of the dark theater at the end of the night. I hope this quote helps to light your path. The body knows things about which the mind is ignorant. Jacques Lecoq. Thanks again for joining me in Life in Theater. We'll be back next week with another episode. Bye!